So I'd like to begin by asking you to do something I don't think I've ever asked anyone to do before at the beginning of a message or a message series. I would like for us to say the title of the series out loud together. So here we go. Ready? Me and my big mouth. Now, this is very important because this is not about your husband and his big mouth, your wife and her big mouth, your boyfriend and his big mouth, your sister-in-law and her big mouth, your boss and his big mouth. This is about you and your big mouth. So one more time with passion, me and my big mouth. That's right. So in case you have to leave early or you tune out early or you lose electricity or the internet, I just want to go ahead and just give you the bottom line for these next 4 weeks because we're going to be talking about you and your big mouth for the next 4 weeks because there's a lot to talk about. And again, the cool thing about this series is if you're a Christian, there's something to take away. If you're not a Christian, there's takeaway because it's so practical, it's so applicable. But I want to go ahead and just give you the bottom line in terms of the big idea and the big application. And I once again would like for you to repeat after me. I'll say it first and then you say it after me. Quick to listen, slow to speak. Quick to listen, slow to speak. And now we're going to go back to middle school camp, and I'm going to ask you to do hand motions. We're going to put hand motions with this. So I'd like for all of you, I know it's kind of silly, if you would, even if you're watching at home or if you're driving, just maybe one hand, keep one hand on the wheel, all right, both eyes on the road. Just put your fist together like this in your lap or just kind of hold your fist. And when we say quick to listen, we're going to open those hands real quick, like quick to listen, okay? So here we go. Ready? Quick to listen, slow to speak. Keep those hands open. Ready? One more time. Ball them up. Ready? Quick to listen, slow to speak. Now, why do we do that? Because when you're in conflict, you're having an argument, you're having a difficult conversation with somebody, you know what happens? You don't recognize this, we don't realize this, but it just happens. Our hands, they do this, they close up. And when they close up, it means our minds are kind of shutting down and our ears are, you know, shutting down and our heart's shutting down. We're just kind of closing up. And the reason in conflict, especially verbal conflict or an argument or we're listening to somebody and we're just, you know, kind of building up all this stuff on the inside, the reason that happens, the reason we close up is because, and this is the interesting thing about all conflict, is because we want exactly what the person we're having the conflict with wants. We actually, both parties want the very same thing. Both parties want to be heard, right? I want to be heard. And more than heard, I want to be understood, right? I want you to be quick to listen to me, and I want you to be slow to speak, but you want me to be quick to listen and slow to speak because you want to be heard and understood. I want to be heard and understood. It's like we're saying, look, we may not ever agree, but you've got to listen to me. We might not ever agree on how to parent. We may never agree on this decision at work. We may never agree on what I should major in. We may never agree on whether he's right for me or she's right for me. We may never agree, but come on, at least listen to me. And if you have to say something, if you're going to interrupt, if you have to interject, if you have to you say something, then say something that lets me know you heard me, even if it's a grunt, even if it's an uh-huh or an ah. I mean, just if sound is going to come out of your mouth, I don't want you to argue with me. I want to know that you've heard me. After all, see, I can't really hear you till I feel like you've heard me, and you can't really hear me until you feel like, to some extent, I've heard you, right? So real quick, one more time, all right? We're going to do this for 4 weeks, and this is going to be great. Some of you are going to be doing it at home, under the table, dinner table, at the office. You're going to be like this in one hand. Okay, so here we go. Ready? Ready? It's all together. Ready now? Quick to listen. Slow. And this time when we say slow, we're going to say slow. We're going to drag it out. Ready? And I know what some of you are thinking. You're already thinking about it's not you and your big mouth. It's why aren't the high school students in here on the front row? And why isn't my middle school daughter sitting beside me today? And why didn't my husband? Okay, but this is about you. Ready? Here we go. Ready? Quick to listen, slow to speak. That's good. That's really good. I'm just telling you, if we stopped right now, this is a game-changing idea. I mean, this is so big. This is, and especially if both parties are into this, I mean, what can you not accomplish if both people decide I'm going to be quick to listen but slow to speak? Now, if you grew up in church, you may recognize that I didn't make this up. I actually stole this. I plagiarized this from a very famous person. His name is James, and James had an even more famous brother whose name was Jesus. James, the brother of Jesus. Again, can you even imagine growing up with Jesus as your big brother? But he did. And James, this is cool, especially if you're not a Christian or you left church for some reason and you read something and somebody told you it's not true, or I don't know why. In fact, if you're not a Christian, I believe you have a great reason not to be, or you would be. So I accept your reasons. But you may not know this. James, brother of Jesus, actually lived in the first century, and he doesn't show up in the story of Jesus. He shows up after the story of Jesus because James thought his brother was crazy. Of course he did. I mean, if your brother claimed to be the son of God, you're like, uh-uh. You're not the son of God. I mean, you're the son of Joseph, but you're not the son. So anyway, after the resurrection, because that's pretty convincing. When you stand with your mother and you watch your brother crucified, and then a few days later you have breakfast with him on the beach, you're convinced. It's like, okay, I can't explain it. So James emerges in the first century as, get this, the leader of the church in Jerusalem, like where all this stuff happened. So if you were to show up in Jerusalem and go to the first church of Jerusalem, James would be up there, you know, doing the slides and preaching the message and leading worship. I don't know, but he was the leader of the church in Jerusalem. Now, James had an unfortunate ending to his life, and the New Testament doesn't tell us this story. Actually, a Jewish historian who wrote many years later tells us the story of what happened to James, and I want to tell you real quick, and then we're going to look at what he said, because this is fascinating. Around 62 AD, this is about 30 years or so after the resurrection of Jesus, James is leading the church in Jerusalem, and James believes in the resurrection, and he keeps teaching about the resurrection, and the high priest at the time, a guy named Annas, did not believe in the resurrection. He didn't believe anybody rose from the dead. He was a Sadducee, and the Sadducees believed that once your life was over, it was just over. You lived for the pleasure of God, and then, boop, lights out, that's the end. So he was sad, you see, because he did not believe in heaven or I know, I didn't make that up either, so that's an old, like, theology joke. So he was sad, you see. That's how you remember what the Sadducees believed. They didn't believe there was an afterlife. So the high priest, Ananias, decides, I got to get rid of James, but people love James. I'll tell you why in just a minute. So the Roman governor of Judea dies. His name was Festus. Festus dies. They're waiting for Rome to send another governor. Well, if there's no Roman governor and there's no Roman oversight, the high priest is the guy. So during this gap in leadership, Ananias decides, this is my chance to get rid of James. So he accuses James, the brother of Jesus, 30 years after the resurrection, of breaking the Jewish law and violating the temple. And he has him arrested. He brings together the Supreme Court, the Sanhedrin, and they have him condemned, and they stone James, the brother of Jesus, to death around 62 AD. Meanwhile, Albinus, the new Roman governor, shows up, and the citizens of Jerusalem who loved James, they tell him what happened because it was an illegal trial and it was an illegal execution because the Jews didn't have permission or the right to execute anyone. We see that in the story of Jesus and his crucifixion. That's why they went to Pilate to get permission. So anyway, the new governor, are you keeping up with this? Anybody know all these names? Yeah. The new governor, Albinus, finds out, and he takes Ananias, the high priest, and he takes him out of his post as high priest and throws him out and puts in a new high priest, but not before James, the brother of Jesus, was stoned to death for believing his brother was his savior. You should just sit on that a little bit if you're a bit skeptical about Christianity. I understand that. Now, the reason this was such a big deal in Jerusalem is because James had a nickname. Talk about bad things happening to good people. James was such an incredible man. His nickname was Just, J-U-S-T. He was known as James the Just, and he was stoned to death because of jealousy and because of what was going on between the church and Judaism back in the first century. But before James the Just went on to his just reward and saw his brother again, imagine that reunion, you're back, oh, that's amazing. I mean, we can't even imagine this stuff, right? Before he did that, he wrote a letter to the church, and in the letter, he talks about how important it is for us relationally to learn to listen and to learn to speak at the right time and to say the right thing. So here's what he says, and the opening line, if you're a woman, I'm telling you, I cannot exaggerate what we're about to discover. In the first century, women, and just really in any environment, in any culture, had little to no rights. They couldn't testify in court. They were property. Fathers decided who their daughters were going to marry based on how it helped them politically or financially. So women just had no rights. James, the brother of Jesus, who has been impacted by the fact that Jesus elevated the status and the dignity of everybody, opens the letter like this. He says, my dear brothers and sisters, because you're on equal footing. Times have changed. God has done something new in the world. Wow. My dear brothers and sisters, take note, that is, sit up straight, and if you're taking notes, take note of this. We're like, all right, James, what you got? He says, everyone. So who are you talking to? Everyone. Everyone, and here's our line, everyone should be quick to listen. which doesn't make any sense. How do you listen quickly? I mean, you hear, but how do you speed up your hearing? And the reason he uses two words that really don't go together is because he's trying to make a very important point. That's what communicators do, right? So here's his point. Your first priority, number one thing in sequence, the most important thing relationally you can do, be quick to listen. Listen quickly. Make it first. Quickly before you do anything else. Listen. Which is, let's be honest, exactly what we want other people to do for us, right? So essentially, James is saying, this is just more of that thing that Jesus taught you. You are to do for others as your Father through Christ has done for you. You're to do for others what you want others to do for you. You want others to listen to you? Yeah. You want to be understood? Yeah. Then be quick to listen. And then here's our other statement, and slow to speak. Literally, the idea is be late. When it comes to your words, wait and be late. And I would add to it, and if you have to say something, be curious. Be curious. Ask a question. When the person that you're having conflict with is just going on and on and on and on, and you got to say something, be curious. Ask a question. You say, well, if I ask a question, they're just going to keep on talking. That's going to send them down another rabbit trail. It's just going to go on and on and on and on. Well, I would say this to you, okay? Ask three questions. Just keep providing more rabbit trails and more on-ramps to them talking. Why? Because your responsibility is to be quick to listen and slow to speak. And the longer they speak, the quicker you are to listen. And the quicker you are to listen, the quicker I am to listen, the more I learn. Now, if you're a parent or ever want to be a parent, and those of you who are parents, our kids are all in their 20s, so I've been through all the different seasons. I'm telling you, how much would I have given if I could have convinced my kids to be curious and to ask questions when I'm going on and on and on and on and on? And in fact, if you're a high school student and you're watching or listening to this, and your parents are listening, you got to wait a couple of months so they'll forget that I said it so you can take credit for this. But I'm telling you, if you want to freak your parents out when they're kind of giving you that dad talk or that mom talk, you just say, Dad, I don't quite see it your way, but I really want to. So can you just say it a different way so I can understand? Boom, they're gone. They're going to pat. Why? Because nobody does that because we argue. But if you can learn, if you can hit pause, if you can be curious, and if you can ask questions, you're quick to listen, and slow to speak. Everything changes. Now, I'll flip it around and say this, and Sandra's here today. I'll tell you, my worst parenting moments was when I was quick to speak and slow to listen. In fact, the things that I've had to apologize to my kids for, and I'm a good apologizer. In fact, Andrew went through a season when he was young, our oldest, where he just apologized all the time for everything. And I finally said to Sandra, where does he get that? And she said, he gets it from you. You apologize so much. I'm like, well, I guess there's a positive to, you know, making lots of mistakes. And so my worst parenting moments were those moments when I did the dad thing. And all of you with any kind of authority, you're tempted to do this, where it's like, okay, I've got the wisdom bucket, you know, and I've got the experience bucket, and I got the age bucket, and I've got the insight bucket, and you don't even have frontal lobe development yet, so... So you stop talking now, and I'm going to pour all my wisdom and all my experience. Hey, where are you going? Hey, why won't my kids talk to me? Why don't they want to hang out with me? It's because you are driving them away. Now, parents, you need to know this. Husbands, you need to know this. Wives, you need to know this. You can write the person you love right out the door. You can write the person you love most right out of the relationship. You can write your all-star, rock star employee right out of the company. You can be right and right and right and right and right, and you will write them right out of the relationship. Because I want to be understood. I don't want to be lectured. And I'm willing to be open to your ideas if I think for a moment you may even partially understand what it is I'm trying to communicate to you. So we know this is important. We've been on both sides. I mean, you've seen your kids' eyes just glaze over and you walk away from the conversation going, I don't understand. I know I'm right. I know I'm giving them good advice. I know I'm giving them, you know, wise counsel. Why is it that we just can't communicate? And James would say, you idiot. Because you're not quick to listen. You're quick to speak. You want to enhance the relationship? Quick to listen, slow to speak. Quick to listen, slow to speak. Now, if you do that, if you get those two ideas, then what he says next comes easy. Here's what he says next. Everybody needs to be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. Now, slow to become angry is both a result and a decision. If you are quick to listen and slow to speak, you are less likely to be angry, and it is easier to guard against your anger if you've decided up front, I'm going to ask questions and I'm going to be curious. Now, anger in this context, and we all express anger differently, right? I mean, some of you blow up, you just kind of let loose, you're like a volcano. Others of us, we just get in a bad mood. That's me. I just kind of go inward and get in a bad mood and, just sulk around and try to get Sandra to say, what's wrong, so I can say, nothing. That's how I get in control. Nothing's wrong. She's like, oh, I know something's wrong. Like, nothing's wrong. You know, that's how I get in control. You say, Andy, that's kind of like a girl. Well, this isn't a girl thing. This is just a people thing, right? We all go one way or the other. We blow up or we go inside. But the point is, he's saying, look, that's so bad for your relationships. And one of the ways to bypass blowing up or just becoming passive aggressive or just being sulky, moody, and trying to get in control that way, he says, is you've got to understand where the other person is coming from. Quick to listen, slow to speak. But anger, in the context of what he's talking about, is really more anger like this. It's drawing hasty, misinformed, relationally destructive conclusions. That is, jumping to hastily and misinformed and relationally destructive conclusions. So here's his formula. It's kind of a formula. The longer you listen, the more you'll learn, the less angry you'll be. The longer you listen, the more you'll learn, the less angry you'll become. Now, here's why this works. And what I'm about to tell you now, this is just common sense. You know, if you're taking notes, you're not going to need to write this down. This is like, really? You're wasting our time telling us this. This is one of those things that's so obvious, but every once in a while, we need to be reminded of what's obvious so we can keep it front and center, so we catch ourselves when we begin to depart from what we shouldn't depart from because it's so obvious nobody should have to tell us. And here it is. Everything that everyone does makes sense to them. That is deep. Isn't that deep? I got like a groan down here on the front, like, whoa, yeah. Everything, this is worth getting up and listening to, you know. Everything that everyone does makes perfect sense to them. It gets worse. Everything that everyone says makes sense to them as well. Okay, and if you're not a Christian person, what I'm about to tell you, I promise you, we believe from the top of our head to the bottom of our feet, it's why you will never feel judged in our churches. Everything everyone believes makes sense to them as well. So here's the thing. When you say, or when you think, because most of the times we think it, or sometimes we'll say it not to the person we're in conflict with, but we'll say it to somebody else, because we do this a lot, especially around political things or religious things or sometimes money things. When you hear yourself saying, or when you catch yourself thinking, I don't know why they would do that. I don't know why they would say that. I don't know why they would believe that. Who needs an education? I'll give you a hint. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know why anybody would do that. Well, who has the problem? Well, I don't know. Well, I think maybe you need to have some learning to do. Oh, I'd just rather be critical. Well, yeah, of course it's more fun to be critical or to just think they're idiots, right? And if you get an education on why they're doing what they're doing, not only will it make more sense, you might join them. Well, we can't have that, so I'll just be ignorant and hang around with people who think like I think, see the world the way I do, so we can all just sit around and go, can you believe that? Why would anybody do that? Why would anybody believe that? Why would anybody say that? Well, guess what? Newsflash. They all have perfectly good reasons for what they do, what they say, what they believe, just like you have a perfectly good reason. Everything everybody does makes perfect sense to them. So, if there's something you don't know, I can't believe my son would do that. Why would my son do that? Why would my daughter? Why would my wife? Why? If there's something you don't know, you need to, that requires questions, not declarations, not little mini sermons. Not proclamations, not here's a bucket of wisdom to duck on you, honey, you know, to drop on you, honey. It requires questions. And we get back to what James says. So, I got an idea, he says. Why don't you be quick to listen and learn? Why don't you be curious? Why don't you ask questions? Why don't you be quick to listen, prioritize listening and learning, and slow, I mean wait and be late slow in what you say in response? Now, some of you from my generation, you may have grown up and read Stephen Covey's book, The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, or you may be in your 20s and have read it. It's such a fabulous book. It's so principle-centered. And of course, Stephen Covey was Mormon. His family was Mormon and read the New Testament, so he may have gotten this from James. I don't know. But the fifth habit of The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, Stephen Covey basically says the same thing. Here's the way he says it. I thought this might be helpful. He says this: seek first to understand, then to be understood. Ta-da, there it is. Seek first to understand. That means I have to ask questions. It means I need to listen. And then, only when I understand, do I seek to be understood. The way I try to do this, and I don't get this perfect, and as a parent, I just so struggled with this. I decided I'm not going to criticize anything I don't understand. I'm not going to criticize any idea I don't understand. And I'm not going to criticize anybody if I don't know their story. And once I decided that, I became a better learner of people and a better understander of ideas. Because if somebody holds an idea, a persuasion, or opinion, it makes sense to them. And if it doesn't make sense to me, who am I to criticize something I don't even understand? And the thing is, when we're in conversation, when we're in conflict, when we're just listening to reply rather than understand, we don't learn anything. And if you're not learning anything, it's going to be hard to make the relationship any better. Because, you know this, we all have a frame of reference. We all have a frame. We all have a filter. And every word you speak to me comes right through my filter. My age, where I went to school, how I was brought up, everything, all my filter. And I hear your words through my filter, and chances are I'm not going to understand you correctly. So I am a fool to judge you, and I'm a fool to criticize you until I understand you, which requires more listening than speaking. Quick to listen, slow to speak. Now, if we stopped right there, that's pretty good, isn't it? I mean, you could do something with that, right? Go home, quick to listen, slow to speak. That's a good church. You know, kind of got through the Jesus thing real quick and then got on with something practical. I can do that, you know? But James isn't finished, because James is the brother of Jesus. Oh, my goodness. He's seen a resurrected brother. He's like, whoa, no, this is way bigger than y'all get along out there. That's not what this is. You know, stop it, cut it out. You know, y'all listen, this isn't that. This isn't just, you know, self-help. This is way bigger than that. He says, there's a divine agenda attached to this. And he continues, he says this: everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to become angry, because, now I'm going to tell you why. Now, we know why. We think, oh, I know why we should do this. Because if I'm calmer, I'll be more convincing. If I'm calmer and I go, oh, yeah, that is so helpful. You know, I'll just kind of reel them in. I got you. And then they're going to see the world the way I do it. I know what this is. This is a ploy. This is something that we're leveraging to get our way. James is going, no. Okay, no, that's not what this is about. Let me explain to you, James would say, why this is a big deal. He says, this: everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to become angry. Because, tell us why, James, because human anger... What is human anger? Human anger is when I don't get my way. I mean, that's why you get angry and why you get frustrated. For years, I would see this counselor named Steve. He was great. And I would say, Steve, I'm so frustrated. He'd say, no, you're angry. I'm like, no, I'm not angry. I'm just frustrated. He's like, what's the difference? I'm like, well, sounds better. You know, it's like, I'm just frustrated. He says, no, you're angry. Okay. So he says, James' point is, look, human anger, and we all know what human, it's just that frustration. Sometimes we blow up. Sometimes we internalize. He says, human anger that results from, you know, talking all the time and not listening very much. Human anger does not produce or does not result in or does not cultivate, does not produce the righteousness that God desires. It's like, what? He goes, yeah, see, there's three agendas here. Andy, there's your agenda. There's his agenda, because you're back and forth. And then there's God's agenda. And as long as you're trying to be right and convince him you're right, that's your agenda, that's your rightness, that's how your rightness connects to your words. And that other person is trying to be right, and God has an agenda as well. And your anger or your frustration not getting your way or not being able to convince them, and her anger or his anger and, you know, not being able to convince you that he or she is right, neither one of those rightnesses is what God is after. God just says, you know, neither of your rights are right. We got to look at a different... right, that there's competing agendas, conflicting agendas. My anger not getting my way and trying to convince you and convict you and control you and persuade you, my anger produces the rightness or the righteousness that I desire. And that's what the word righteousness means. It just simply means rightness. And do you know what my rightness is? My rightness is simply this. I know I know I'm right. That's my righteous. That's my rightness, my righteousness. That my anger produces my rightness. I know I'm right. I want you to know I'm right. And I want everybody to know I'm right. And my anger and my frustration and my persuasion skills produce my rightness, my righteousness. And James says, that's not the righteousness or the rightness that God is after. That's not the right. And this is what he draws us into. And this is so big. We're going to come back to this in a couple of weeks. He says, let's be honest, folks. You want to be right at each other. God wants you to be right with one another. Big difference. You want to be right at one another. I want to convince you that I'm right, and I want you to finally throw up your hands and say, you're right. But let's be honest, okay, for those of you who are in relationships, okay, when you win an argument, do you really win anything? No, I mean, you win the argument. It's like, I won the argument. Where is she? I don't know. She left. But I won the argument. Yes, you won the argument. You lost the relationship. Oh, yeah. Again, parents, you can write your kids right out the door. And James is saying, come on, because he's talking primarily to Christians. He's going, Christians, come on. That's not what God wants. God isn't on your side or the other side. God doesn't take sides. God comes to take over, and he comes to take over your life. And he doesn't want you to be right at each other. He wants you to be right with one another. And now he draws us in to Jesus' great commandment. You know, Jesus gave the one command instead of the Ten Commandments. He gave the one commandment that was the overarching ethic for all of Christian behavior. And that is, as I have loved you, you are to love one another. And the interesting thing is this, when you read the New Testament, Jesus did not come to be right. That would have taken about 30 minutes, right? He shows up, he gets everybody together and says, I'm right. Any questions? And then he could do all of his zingers and his snappy answers to stupid questions and all that stuff he did with the Pharisees and Sadducees where he made them all just kind of left them spinning in the wind because they tried to track. I mean, if Jesus just came to be right, it would not have ended with him being crucified. Jesus didn't come to be right. And he says to you as a Jesus follower, and he says to me as a Jesus follower, and Andy, your goal and your mission in life isn't to be right either. You're to embrace the mission of your Savior. He did not come to be right. He came to reconcile us to God and to one another. So he says to me, and he says to you, quit being right at each other, and you figure out how to get right with one another. How do we do that, James? I already told you. Quick to listen, slow to speak. Quick to listen, slow to speak. If the two of you, he would say, aren't right, it doesn't matter who's right. You don't win a relational argument. You don't win a fight in a marriage. There is no winner if things aren't right between you. In fact, being right can actually make things worse. Quick to listen, slow to speak. Then he continues, because he's still not done. He's just, this is so rich. He says, therefore, now that we know what the goal is, now we know what the application is, let's just take this one step further because there's something else you need to do if this is going to work. He says, therefore, get rid of all moral filth. Now, this little phrase right here, get rid of, in Greek, is the word that you would use for taking off a jacket or taking off a coat. Hey, come on in. Take off your coat. Relax. Take off your jacket. Relax. You know, take that off. He says, come on. He says, you're walking around with an I'm right jacket. You're walking around with an I'm right coat. It says right here, I'm right, or just inside, I'm right. You're right. So your whole goal in life and relationships, if you're not careful, is just to prove to everybody that you're okay, you're cool, you got it going on, and that you're right. He says, okay. You got to take that thing off. You got to take that thing off. And the reason he says moral filth, I mean, this just sounds so big and nasty and dirty, and here's why. You know this. Self-rightness, you know, the Bible term is self-righteousness, but that sounds so Bible, so let's just make it, you know, bring it into our world. Self-rightness, I've always got to be right, quickly becomes a moral issue. In fact, if it's taken to an extreme, or even a partial extreme, it can become an issue. Isn't this true of life and death? Isn't it true that violence between friends generally begins with a conversation, words that escalate out of control? I have to be right after. Violence in the workplace, sometimes domestic violence, begins with conversations, begins with words, begins with vibrating the air with this little thing in our ear that translates it into sound, into words. I mean, all of it, we're not even close to each other. And the next thing you know, there's actual physical violence. There's immoral, unethical behavior that begins with words that escalate, because everybody's talking and nobody's listening. I'm right, and I demand my rights. And James says, come on. You're going to follow Jesus? You're going to be reconciled to God and to each other? You got to take that off. He said, there's something else you got to take off too. And the evil that is so prevalent. The word evil here, maybe in this context, a better word might be the word malice. We don't use that word much, malice. Malice is a desire to harm. Malice is a desire to get even. Malice is a desire to get back or to pay somebody back. He said, and that's what epitomizes your culture. He says, when it dawns on you're in the middle of that argument with a husband or with your son or your daughter, your parents, or whatever, you know, it's kind of escalating. He says, when you realize, okay, there I go again. I got on my control, I'm right jacket. He says, you just got to hit pause and go, okay, I'm just taking that thing off. Because I know where this leads, and it never leads to anything good, because even if I win, the relationship loses. And he says, let me give you an alternative. Take that thing off, and here's what I want you to put on. This is so powerful. And I love this. And humbly, here's a word that hasn't been a part of the conversation yet, but it's the key. And humbly accept the word implanted in you. He says, I want you to take off the I always got to be right, and I want you to put on humility. And humility says, we are more important than me. You are important, more important than me. And we, reconciling, keeping us on the same page, being right with you is more important to me than getting my way. That's humility. He said, I want you to receive, and then he kind of uses a little code word for New Testament stuff. I want you to receive the word implanted in you. He says, look, you're a Christian, aren't you? He's saying to this group, you're Jesus followers, aren't you? Yeah. He says, well, you already know how this works. You've already embraced the big picture. I mean, you've got the context. You've got the frame that God sent his son into the world to die for you. He put you ahead of himself, and now he's asked you to do that for others, right? Yeah. Well, then do that. Okay, I don't know how. I've told you how. Be quick to listen and slow to speak. He's saying, step back into this basic truth that you embraced when you first became a follower of Jesus. And then he ends it with this. He says, that which has the power to save you, not save you eternally. We're not talking about eternal life. Save you now. Save your marriage. Save your relationship. Save your job. Save your relationship with your son or your daughter. Save you from regretful words. Save you from having to apologize again. Save you from acting out in anger. Maybe saving you from divorce. Or perhaps prison. But the key word is the word accept. He says, you've got to step back into what you've known from day one as a Christian. You've got to accept it. You have to embrace it. Because doing this, not knowing this, he talks about that later in his letter too. Doing this is what makes all the difference. So I'm going to put the whole thing back together, read it to you, and then we're going to get out of here. So here's what James, the brother of Jesus, who was martyred in the year 63 because he believed his brother was his Lord. I can't get over that. Here's what he says. He says this. My dear brothers and sisters, take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. And if you're quick to listen and you're slow to speak, then you will be slow to become angry. Why, James? Why should we do this? He says, because it's bigger than just getting along. Because human anger, the anger of I've got to be right and prove to you I'm right and always win all the conversations and the arguments, that kind of anger doesn't produce the righteousness, the rightness that God desires, because God desires for you to be right with each other, not at each other. Therefore, he says, if you're going to get this right, you're going to have to take off that moral filth that I got to be right, I got to have it my way all the time. Therefore, get rid of all that moral filth and the evil that's so prevalent in your culture and humbly accept, step back into the basic truths that got you on this journey to begin with, because that has the power to save you right now. Wow. So One more time. Get your hands out, okay? Some of you are like, I don't like this sermon. Okay, this is not for me. Yes, it is. I know, because it's you and your big mouth and me and my big mouth. Ready? Ready? Quick to listen. Slow to speak. One more time. Ready? Quick to listen. Slow to speak. James says, look, don't settle. Don't settle for being right. Make sure you make things right and you keep things right. And we're going to pick it up there, right there, next week. Before we go, I want to say one more thing. For those of you who are still trying to figure out the Christianity thing, or you used to be a church person and now you're not anymore, or you're coming back, or you've got so many questions and I haven't answered any of them today, I just want to leave you with this. Listen to this. This thing that we just talked about, quick to listen, slow to speak, this is exactly what your Heavenly Father did for you through Christ. Get this. He sent his Son into the world. He sent his Son into the world as one who could not speak. This is why I believe the gospel narrative is true. No one would make this up. You don't begin the adventure, you don't begin the story of a Savior with a fragile baby who's chased out of their own country because of a jealous king. That God sent his Son into the world, not as a preacher or a teacher or a prophet or an author or a wordsmith. He sent his Son into the world as a baby who was speechless. And for 30 years, he just experienced life. The sorrow, the disappointment, the funerals, the persecution. Watching Rome invade his culture and dominate what happened even in his own religious world. And for 30 years, he listened. And he experienced life like you experience it. And then, after 30 years, he began to speak. And people flocked. And do you know why they flocked? They felt as if he understood. In fact, in one of the Gospels, it says that they were amazed when Jesus spoke because he did not speak to them like their teachers of the law. He spoke as a person who had a different kind of authority. And they felt understood. And here's the best part. And people who were nothing like Jesus liked him because they sensed he liked them back. And then he invited all of them to follow him. And it changed the world. And that invitation stands today. You are invited to become a follower of Jesus, the older brother of James the Just, who went to his violent death believing that when he opened his eyes on the other side, he would see his brother.